Shabaka was the umpire at the bridge crossing. On horseback, he'd galloped across from his post at the javelin butts as soon as Nefer and Mirren had cleared them. Now he'd taken his next station at the bridge. This was the most crucial stage of the entire Red Road. The novices had a choice here. They could decline to breach the wall of fire to reach the bridge. Instead, they might take the long route and cross further down the valley where the cliffs fell gently away. However, this added almost 2 leagues to the course. Shabako stood at the head of the bridge and watched Nefer's chariot leave the archery butt, and, with the pursuit close behind him, come racing towards him along the lip of the precipice. Shabako's sympathies were with his pharaoh. However, his loyalty to the Red God was even more compelling. Though he longed with all his heart to see Nefer succeed, he dared not show him favour. That would go against his sacred oath and place his immortal soul in peril. He considered the fence. Along the length of it, his men crouched with burning torches. The fence was twice the height of a man, and made of bundles of dry grass that would burn like tinder on this hot, dry wind. The fence was built in a semicircle, with each end anchored on the edge of the cliff. It held the head of the bridge in its arms. There was no way round it. To reach the bridgehead, the novices must break through it. Reluctantly, Shabako shouted the order to set the fire. The torchbearers ran down its length, dragging the flames along the bottom of the fence. They caught instantly, rising in a towering wall of awful crimson flame and dark smoke. Nefer saw the wall of flame rise ahead of them, and though he'd anticipated it, still his spirits quailed, and he feared for the horses, for they'd already endured so much. He watched Cruce's ears and saw them switching back and forth with alarm as he smelt the smoke and watched the flames leap and tumble on the wind. Not far behind them, he heard Damios's derisive jeers. "Take the long road, Neferseti! The fire's too hot for your tender skin!" Nefer ignored him and studied the wall of fire as they bore down on it. There was no weak place that he could see, but the nearest end had been lit first, and the flames burnt faster and more furiously. As he watched, a heavy bundle of the dried grass fell out of the wall and left a narrow gap through which he could make out the wavering, heat-obscured outline of the bridgehead beyond. He steered for the gap and told Mirren beside him, "Cover your head!" They wound headcloths over their heads and splashed water from the skin over themselves, drenching their headcloths and chitons. "Have the blindfolds ready?" Nefer told Mirren. They were so close now that they could feel the heat blazing out to meet them, and Cruce broke step and began to balk at the barrier of leaping flame that confronted him. "Mount up!" Nefer ordered, and still at the gallop they ran out along the shaft between the horses and swung up onto their backs, riding astride. Nefer stretched out along Cruce's neck and spoke to him calmly. "It's all right, my darling. You know the blindfold. You know I'll not hurt you. Trust me, Cruce, trust me." And he covered his eyes with the thick woolen cloth and steered him with his knees at the narrow gap in the burning wall. The heat poured over them in a wave. Their wet clothing steamed, and Nefer felt the skin on the back of his hands blistering. The tips of Cruce's mane blackened and crisped, but both horses ran on strongly. They struck the wall of blazing grass, and it exploded round them. Nefer felt his eyes frying in his head, and he closed them tightly and urged Cruce on. They burst out of the far side, trailing sparks and fire. Nefer looked back under his arm and saw Damios aiming his chariot at the gap that had broached the burning wall. Damios's horses were not blindfolded, and they saw the flames and shied off the line and began to rear and plunge, fighting to avoid the horror they saw ahead of them. "Damios's horses have refused!" Nefer shouted across at Mirren on the dove's back. "We have a chance now!" They charged up to the bridgehead, reined the horses down, and halted them just short. "Keep them blindfolded," Nefer ordered. "Don't let them see the drop." The catwalk of the bridge had been built deliberately too narrow for a chariot to drive across, and it would not carry their weight. They would have to break the vehicle down and carry it across piecemeal. While Mirren unbuckled the harness and hobbled the horses, Nefer seized the mallet and knocked the bronze retaining pins out of the hubs. Then he pulled off the wheels. He picked up one of them, and Mirren took the other. They ran to the head of the bridge. The bridge swung gently and undulated to the impulse of the wind. It was not wide enough for the two of them to cross shoulder to shoulder. Neffer did not hesitate, but ran out onto the narrow way, and Mero followed close behind him. The bridge moved under their feet like the deck of a ship at sea. But they balanced the motion and fixed their eyes on the far bank. Neffer looked down at the terrible void beneath them, and the gut of the gorge lined with jagged rock. They reached the far side, dropped the wheels, and ran back. At the burning fence, the flame was still too high and fierce to let Demios pass through, though they saw him flogging his team and screaming abuse at them. They discarded the water skin, the last of the arrows, and every other piece of redundant equipment, and picked up the chassis of the chariot between them. They carried it out onto the bridge, where the wind caught their hair braids on the end of the long staffs, and whipped them jubilantly. Each careful step they took seemed to last a lifetime, but at last they reached the far side, dropped the chassis, and ran back. Neffer picked up the shaft and balanced its weight across his shoulders. Meron carried the harness and the swords, and they crossed again. Now, only the horses remained to bring over. When they started back, they saw that the flames were dying, but where the fence had collapsed it had formed a thick bed of ash that still glowed with oven-like heat. Rastafa, one of the pursuers, forced his horses into it with whip and threatening shouts, but within a few paces the hide had burnt from their legs and the raw red flesh showed through. They turned back despite their driver, screaming and kicking at the pain. Neffer led Meron back at a run, with the bridge swaying under them. They reached the horses. Dov and Krus stood patiently, hobbled and blindfolded. They unbuckled the knee hobbles. "Take Dov across first," Neffer ordered. "She's the steady one." While Neffer waited on the near side with his arm round Krus's neck, Meron led Dov out onto the catwalk of the bridge. She felt it move under her, lifted her head and snorted with alarm. Meron talked softly to her. Gingerly she took another pace and stopped again. "Don't rush her," Neffer called. "Let her set her own pace." A step at a time, Dov moved out onto the high bridge. When she reached the middle, she froze, and stood with all four legs splayed and trembling. Meron stroked her forehead and whispered to her, and she went on. She reached the far side, stepped off the catwalk, felt the solid earth under her, whinnied, and shook her head with relief. Still blocked by the burning barrier, Demios shouted, "They've got one of the team across! We have to stop them now! Rastafa, give me your horses! They're crippled already! I'll ride them through even if it kills them!" Neffer glanced back and saw Demios riding into the glowing bed of ash. It reached as high as his mount's knees, and the maimed animal stumbled and almost fell, but Demios drove it on in a torrent of sparks and a stench of burning hair and flesh. The terribly injured animal carried him through and collapsed as soon as it reached open ground. Demios jumped from its back, drew his sword, and rushed towards Neffer. Neffer drew his own sword and called to Meron across the chasm, "Come back and take Krus over! I'll hold this bastard in play!" He stepped forward to meet Demios as he charged in. He met his cut high in the natural line, and the blades jarred and scraped their full length. Demios reversed and cut again at his head. Neffer caught the stroke, then riposted, forcing him to jump back. Neffer had one moment to glance back and saw that Meron was already leading Krus out onto the swaying catwalk. Krus felt it move under his hoofs, tossed his head, and tried to back away. "Come away, Krus!" Neffer shouted at him sternly, and at the sound of his voice the colt steadied and stepped gingerly onto the planking. Demios came in again, and Neffer had to concentrate everything on him. He aimed a rapid series of thrusts at Neffer's throat and chest, and when Neffer blocked and parried, he reversed and cut low at his ankles. Neffer jumped over the glittering circle of the blade and went for his exposed shoulder. He touched him and saw the blood spring brightly on the tanned and oiled muscles. But Demios didn't seem to feel the shallow wound. He came on as strongly as before. They exchanged parry for thrust and block for cut. Then Demios stepped back and circled to the left, trying to move behind him and cut him off from the bridgehead. But Neffer went at him again and forced him to give ground. A moment's respite, and Neffer saw that the flames had died down, the grass fence burnt almost completely away. The other chasers had left their chariots and were jumping over the bed of glowing ash and running to join the fight. "Form a ring round him and cut him down!" Demios shouted to them as they ran up. Neffer glanced back and saw that Merrin had led Chris far out onto the catwalk. The colt was trembling and sweating at the sensation of the moving deck under his hoofs, but he could not see the terrible aching void below him. Just then the other chasers ran up, brandishing their blades and jeering at Neffer, "Now we'll run your braid right up your royal ass!" Neffer retreated quickly onto the head of the bridge. Now they could come at him only one at a time, and the jeers died away. They paused in a group at the head of the catwalk. "He's nicked me," said Damios. "Do you go after him, Rastafa, while I bind it up." With his teeth he tore off a strip of the hem of his tunic and tied it over the shallow flesh wound. While he was doing this, Rastafa ran out onto the bridge. He was bearded and swarthy, with a dark and angry gaze, a big man but quick as a ferret. He balanced easily on the moving deck and thrust at Neffer's throat, coming on so strongly that Neffer had to fall back again. Cruz heard the clash of blades and the shouting close behind him, and he reared up in protest. The bridge jumped and wobbled under him, and for a terrible moment it seemed that the colt might lose his balance and go over the side. But by some miraculous chance he came down on all four legs and stood quivering on the wildly swinging catwalk. It was Rastafa who stumbled and teetered on the edge. He windmilled his arms as he fought to regain his balance. Neffer took one quick step towards him and stabbed him under his lifted arm. The bronze blade slipped in between the ribs and went in deeply. Rastafa looked at him with mild surprise and said, "It hurts! In the name of Seth, it hurts!" Neffer jerked the blade out, and Rastafa's heart blood fountained after it. Spouting crimson, he toppled backwards and went spinning into the abyss, arms and legs spread like the spokes of a wheel. His voice was a wild screech, fading in volume as he fell away, and the sound was cut off abruptly as his armour clattered on the rocks in the gut of the gorge. His comrades hesitated at the bridgehead, appalled by the horror of that death plunge, suddenly reluctant to step out onto the narrow way. Neffer seized the moment to turn back and stroke Cruz's trembling haunches. "Steady, Cruz, I'm here, my darling. Walk on." Cruz calmed to his voice, and then as the wild gyrations of the bridge eased, he took a step forward and another. "Walk on, Cruz. Walk on." They were almost halfway across when Merrin shouted a warning. "Behind you, brother!" Neffer whirled round just in time to meet another opponent. Neffer knew him by reputation. He was a Libyan slave, and he was fighting for his freedom. Fearlessly he ran down the narrow deck, straight at Neffer. He used the full impetus of his charge, and Neffer was only just able to turn aside that first stroke. They locked blades and came chest to chest, clamping each other in a murderous embrace with their free arms. They heaved and wrestled, shifting and shoving for the advantage. Cruz heard the struggle behind him, and it spurred him on. He lunged forward again, covering another few paces towards the safety of the far bank. Neffer was face to face with his man. His teeth were black and jagged, and his breath stank like rotten fish. He tried to sink those filthy fangs into Neffer's face, snapping at him like a dog, but Neffer pulled back, then butted with his forehead, slamming the peak of his leather helmet into the bridge of the man's nose. He felt the bone and gristle break, and the man released his grip and reeled back. He lost his footing and grabbed the side rope of the bridge to steady himself, hanging on desperately, his back arched out over the drop. Neffer chopped off his grasping fingers, and the rope slipped from the bloody, severed stubs. He went over backwards, screaming and twisting in the air. He seemed to fall for a long time before he struck the rocks below with a meaty thump. There were three men on the catwalk behind him, led by Damios. He'd bound up his wound and seemed unhurt, but he'd seen what had happened to his two comrades, and now he was more wary. Neffer engaged him, keeping him off a full blade's length, giving him ground only as Cruz moved forward slowly and hesitantly towards the far bank. Suddenly Merrin shouted triumphantly, "We're across, Neffer!" And he heard Cruz's hoofs clatter on the rock bank. "Cruz has come over!" Neffer did not look round, for Damios's blade flashed and gleamed before his eyes, but he shouted, "Cut down the bridge, Merrin! Cut away the mainstays and let her fall!" Damios heard the command and jumped back with alarm. He glanced over his shoulder and saw how far he'd come out onto the catwalk and how far back it was to the other bank. Merrin stood over the two thick ropes that carried the full weight of the catwalk. He hacked at one, and his first stroke cut halfway through. The strands parted with a sharp popping sound and began to unravel like mating serpents. Pale horror washed over Demios's sweaty face, and he turned and fled, his comrades with him, back along the narrow way. Nefer whirled and ran towards where Merin stood over the ropes. He reached the end of the bridge and jumped to safety. Immediately he attacked the other mainstay, chopping at it with full overhead blows. One of the stays parted, and the entire bridge shivered and then tilted violently to one side. Demios flung himself forward and dragged himself onto firm ground just as the second stay gave way, and the bridge sagged and fell into the abyss. Demios recovered and stood on the edge of the precipice, glaring at them across the void. Nefer sheathed his sword and gave him a taunting wave. "You have a long ride ahead of you." Then he ran to help Merin reassemble the chariot. They had practiced this a dozen times under Taita's watchful eye. While Merin lifted one side of the chassis, Nefer eased the wheels onto the hubs and drove the bronze locking pins home with the mallet. Then they lifted the shaft and fastened it to the ring bolt on the footplate. Nefer wasted a few seconds to look back across the gorge. He saw that Demios and the surviving chasers were already mounting their chariots, and through the last wisps of smoke from the smouldering glass fence, he saw them speed away in a line ahead, following the track along the edge of the gorge that would lead them eventually to where the cliffs flattened out, so that they'd be able to bring their vehicles and horses across and renew the pursuit. "We've won enough time," Merin tried to sound confident, but the effort of bringing the nervous horses across the bridge had taxed him severely, and he pressed a hand to his injured side. Nefer feared for him. "Perhaps, but that'll depend on the Red God," he said, and touched the periapt of Lostris at his throat. They buckled the horses into the harness and hitched them to the long shaft. Then they scrambled up onto the footplate and started them along the line of marker flags. They could push the horses to the utmost on this stretch, for at the end of it waited Karma of Taurine and Drossa of Indus. The horses might have a long rest indeed while their drivers went into the ring with the two most notorious swordsmen in Artla's troop. Nefer forced the pace, and the marker flag sped by in quick, regular succession. They crested the final rise and saw ahead of them, at the far end of the long, narrow valley, the city of Galala, with her gates standing wide open to welcome them. But at the head of the valley, between them and the city, gathered in a shallow basin of hills, was a large crowd of many hundreds of persons. It seemed that every last citizen had come out from the city to watch the trial by swords. They rode down fast and heard the din of the crowd rise like the sound of storm surf to greet them. There was a lane through the crowds, demarcated by wooden railings, that led them to two rings of white stones in the centre. As they jumped down and the grooms ran forward to hold the horses, Nefer embraced Merin. "You're sore hurt, brother," he whispered to him. "There's no shame in that, for it was a wound received with honour. But it'll hamper you. You must not try to confront Drossa, and trade him blow for blow. He's fast and strong, and he wears full armour. Run from him, and keep running until I come to your aid." They parted then, each to the ring allotted to them by the umpires, and Nefer halted at the line of white-painted stones and looked at the warrior in the centre. Karma of Taurine wore full armour, helm, breastplate, and greaves. If Nefer and Merin had wanted the same protection, they would have had to carry it in the chariot from the start. But the weight of the two suits would have drained even Chris's strength. From the edge of the ring of stones, Nefer studied his man. Karma's helmet was a hideous mask with spread wings above the ears, and the nosepiece was an eagle's beak. The eyes that glittered behind the sockets were inhuman and implacable. His chest was protected by a bronze cuirass. His gauntlets were covered with golden fish scales. He carried a small circular sword on his left shoulder. Throat, wrist, armpit, ankles, and eyes, Taita had instructed Nefer. All else is covered. Nefer lifted the periapt of Lostris over his head and wound the long golden chain around his left wrist. Then he held the tiny golden figure to his lips and kissed it. He stepped over the white stones and went forward to meet Karma of Taurine. They circled once to the right, then back, and suddenly Karma burst upon him with a blazing series of thrusts and cuts that were so rapid as to almost cheat the eye. Carrying that weight of armour, Nefer had not expected him to be so fast. He had to exert all his skill and strength to hold him off, and still he received a cut through his leather body armour that scored his ribs. He felt the hot blood trickle down his flank as they disengaged and circled again. The crowd was shouting and roaring like a storm sea all round them. But in the sudden quiet as they disengaged, he heard a cry of pain from the other ring, and he recognised Meron's voice. Meron had taken a hit, and by the sound of it a grievous one. He needed Nefer's help. Probably his life depended on it, but Nefer's own life was in terrible jeopardy, for he'd never faced an opponent such as this Karma before. Even Taita had not been able to divine any weakness in him, but as they came together again in the whirl and clangour of metal on metal, Nefer noticed a tiny flaw. When Karma made a low underhand cut, he opened his right side for an instant and thrust his head forward, an awkward gesture out of keeping with his otherwise fluid and graceful style. Nefer knew that he could not hold out much longer. Karma was simply too skillful and powerful for him. Everything on one throw of the dice. He took the gamble and offered his right hip unguarded, and like a striking adder, Karma went for it with a low cut, his front opened and his head thrust forward. Prepared for it, Nefer swayed his hip out of the shot, and the blade slit the hem of his chiton without drawing blood. The golden periapt of Lostris twinkled as he spun it on the end of its chain. Then Nefer whipped it in like a slingshot, using the chain to speed the throw so that it became a darting beam of light. It flashed into the eye socket of Karma's helmet, and the sharp metal edge sliced deeply through his eyeball. Karma reeled back with a mixture of eye jelly and blood pouring down his golden mask. He was blinded and disorientated with pain, trying to wrench off his helmet to reach his burst eyeball. As the rim of the helmet lifted and exposed his throat, Nefer drove his point in a thumb's width above the lump of his Adam's apple. The point angled up into the back of his brain, and Karma flung his arms wide and went down, dead before his armour clanged on the sun-baked earth. Nefer placed his cleated sandal on his throat and had to wrench with all his strength to draw the point of his sword free from where it was trapped between the metal of the helmet and the bone of his skull. Nefer left the corpse lying, and wrapping the chain of the amulet round his wrist again, ran from the ring. He tried to reach the other ring where he knew Meron was in mortal danger, but the crowds impeded him. He swung his sword to clear the way, and the spectators fled screaming ahead of him. He broke through the press and saw that in the second ring Meron had lost his weapon and was bleeding profusely from a terrible gash in his right side and a cut that had half severed his ear. It dangled down his cheek on a thread of flesh. Somehow he was managing to stay out of Drossa's reach, backing frantically away from him. Drossa was laughing, bellowing like a bull with the joy of killing, the sound echoing eerily within the confines of his crested war helmet. He was goading Meron into a position for the killing stroke, taking his time, enjoying it. Drossa's back was turned to Nefer. Nefer sprang at him and aimed a thrust through the lacing of his cuirass. With the instincts of a wild animal, Drossa sensed the danger and spun to face him. Nefer's thrust struck the metal breastplate and glanced aside, and Drossa aimed a full-blooded cut at his head. Nefer ducked and recoiled, and they circled each other. Meron saw his chance, and stooped to pick up the sword he'd dropped, but Drossa leapt at him. Meron was so weak that he stumbled backwards and fell. Drossa kicked the fallen sword out of the ring and placed his foot between Meron's shoulders and pinned him down.
"Behold, mighty Pharaoh, feared by all the world! I have your bum-boy in my power!"
He feigned the stroke of a headsman, but stopped his blade against the back of Meron's neck.
"Shall I give you his head? A gift fit for the king!"
Nefer felt red blind anger sweep over him, and he rushed at Drossa to drive him off Meron's prostrate form. He felt the sting of the blade across his thigh, which sobered him. He jumped back and saw by Drossa's eyes in the helmet slits that he was toying with him, drawing the last drop of sadistic pleasure from the encounter. Drosser was an entertainer, and the crowd were loving his performance. They howled their approval. Suddenly, Merrin reached up and grasped Drosser's ankle with both bloody hands and tried to trip him. Drosser stumbled, swore, and kicked his boot free, but for an instant he was off balance, and Neffer seized the opportunity and rushed in. He aimed for the throat, into the gap between the chin-piece of the helmet and the top of the breastplate. Drosser twisted away, and the point of Neffer's sword rang on metal. Neffer had missed his chance for a kill, but he'd driven Drosser off his victim, and Merrin scrambled to his feet and staggered behind Neffer, using him as a protective shield. They circled again, and Neffer felt the first cold draught of despair lift the hairs on his forearms. He knew he could not expect a man like Drosser to give him another chance. In despair, he tried again with the periapt, swinging it on the length of gold chain and aiming for the eye slits in Drosser's helmet. Drosser dropped his chin, and the gold charm glanced off the brow of his helm. If it had not been upon the chain, Neffer would have lost it, but he recovered it and let the chain wind itself round his left wrist again.
"That's no weapon but a child's toy!"
Drosser laughed scornfully. They circled and fainted, Drosser moving easily, but Neffer was hampered by his need to guard Merrin. He could not launch an attack and leave Merrin unprotected. Drosser was working the two of them like a sheepdog with a flock of lambs, pushing them back against the line of white stones. He wanted to make a spectacular kill to please the crowd and to enhance his own reputation.
"The chasers!"
someone in the crowd yelled, and every head swung and lifted to the crest of the rise at the head of the long valley. Damios's chariot raced over the skyline. Desperate to make up for his humiliation at the bridgehead, he was riding hard and outstripped the rest of his troop. He came tearing down towards them at the top of his speed.
"You belong to me, mighty Egypt,"
Drosser mocked Neffer.
"I'll not let an upstart like Damios take your hair braid from me."
He moved in menacingly, and Neffer could see the icy determination in the pale eyes that watched him through the helmet slits. Neffer whispered to Merrin, "If I fall, save yourself. Step out of the ring."
"No, Pharaoh. I will ride with you as your lance-bearer on the road to paradise,"
Merrin said softly, as his strength failed him. His legs gave way under him, and bleeding, he sagged to earth. Drosser seized the moment and came down upon Neffer like an avalanche. His sword clanged and rang on Neffer's desperate guard like a coppersmith's hammer on the anvil. Each blow jarred and numbed Neffer's right arm to the shoulder, and he knew that he could not last out much longer. Still, he watched Drosser's eyes to read each blow, and saw them narrow and gleam as he gathered himself for the killing stroke. It came from on high, like a thunderbolt from the sky, and all Neffer could do was lift his own blade above his head to meet it. He knew he could not turn or stop it with one hand, it was too powerful. So he braced his sword hand, gripping the right wrist with his left hand, the hand that held the golden periapt. The two swords came together with force that bronze could not resist. Both blades snapped cleanly and spun away, glittering out of the circle of white stones. At a stroke they were both disarmed, and for an instant they stared at each other in astonishment. Neffer recovered first, and hurled the hilt of the sword at Drosser's head. Instinctively, Drosser blinked and ducked. Neffer charged at him as they came, chest to chest. Like a pair of temple dancers, they whirled round first one way, then back again, trying to throw each other. Irresistibly, Drosser worked his arms under Neffer's armpits, and locked his armoured fists between his shoulder blades. With wristlets of silver and gauntlets of gold, he started to grind Neffer against his bronze cuirass. Neffer had no response as he was lifted off his feet. He had no weapon to defend himself, except the periapt of Lostris. With the last of his strength, he managed to throw a loop of the gold chain over Drosser's helmet. He took a turn round each of his own wrists and pulled the chain downwards until suddenly it found the gap below the rim of the helmet and closed round Drosser's neck. Neffer sawed and strained the ends of the chain and felt the golden links biting deep in living flesh. Drosser gasped, released his grip, and reached up with both hands to try to break free. He seized Neffer's wrists and tried to pull them away from his throat, but this increased the cutting power of the links. Staring into the slits of the helmet, Nefer saw Dross's eyes start from their sockets and swell with blood. He took another turn round his right wrist and sawed the chain back and forth. Drosser made a gargling sound, and a vein popped in one of his eyes. It bulged crimson as a ripe berry from the socket, and still clutching Nefer's wrists, Drosser sank to his knees. Nefer stood over him and rolled his wrists, tightening the chain, until suddenly he felt it cut through something gristly, and Drosser's breath burst explosively from his severed windpipe. Nefer took another wrap of the chain and pulled again, feeling it cut its way down to bone. Blood erupted in thick guts from under the rim of the helmet, and Nefer gathered himself and exerted all his remaining strength. The chain found the joint between two vertebrae in Drosser's neck and cut through. Drosser's head sprang from his shoulders, and still clad in the heavy helmet, rolled across the ring. As Nefer staggered backwards, he heard the umpire shout, "You are free and clear!" And he slipped the bloody golden chain back over his head. As he did so, he looked over the heads of the maddened crowd back up the slope of the hill. Damios's chariot was already halfway down and coming straight towards him at full gallop. Nefer stooped over Merrin. "Can you stand?" he asked. But when Merrin made the effort, his legs collapsed under him and he sprawled on the trampled earth. Nefer pulled him up by one arm, then swung the arm over the back of his neck. Taking the weight across his shoulders, he raised Merrin to his feet, grabbed him behind the knees, and lifted his inert body off the ground, his head dangling down his back and his legs down his front. Merrin was a heavy man, and Nefer was almost exhausted, near the limit of his strength. He staggered with him to the waiting chariot and dropped him in a heap on the floorboards. For a moment he leant panting against the near wheel and looked back. Damios had reached the level ground at the bottom of the slope and was less than 400 paces away, coming on swiftly, so close that Nefer could see the triumphant expression on his face. Damios leant forward and cracked the long black lash over the back of his team, and the horses seemed to spring forward, coming on even faster. The chariots of the other chasers were following him down the slope, six of them all told. If he had any thought of standing to fight them, Nefer put it out of his mind at once. In his present state he could not even take on Damios in a straight fight. He had to run. Nefer took two turns of the grab rope around Merrin's body, worked them up under his armpits and clinched the knot, strapping him to the floorboards. Then he dragged himself up onto the footplate and stood straddling Merrin's body. "Turn them loose," he called to the grooms who held the horses' heads, and they released them and jumped out of the way. "Come away, Dov! Come away, Krus!" he called to them and snapped the reins across their gleaming backs. They sprang forward together, and the crowd scattered ahead of them. He pointed their heads down the valley towards the open gates of the city and let them run. Between his feet, Merrin groaned involuntarily as the chariot jolted and lurched, and Nefer tried to steer to miss the patches of rough ground. Behind him he heard the crack of the lash. He glanced back and saw Damios bearing down on them. He was flogging on his team and shouting at them angrily, but Dov and Krus were holding them off despite Damios's cruel work with the whip. Nefer looked ahead and judged the distance they still had to run. It was less than half a league to the gates of Galala. Already he could make out the wreaths of palm fronds that adorned the walls and decorated the red stone columns of the entrance. At that moment he paid the price for his inattention. His off-wheel hit an outcrop of rock at the edge of the track, and the vehicle bounced high and slewed wildly under him. It almost capsized. But as he fought for control, Krus leant into the traces and helped him to pull it straight. Now, when Nefer looked back, he saw that the mistake had cost him dear, for Damios had gained 100 paces on them. He was within javelin range, and Nefer saw him reach for the missiles in the bin at his side and wind the thong onto his wrist. Nefer had no reply to him. He had used all his darts at the first stage. He had dropped his bow at the chasm, and his last sword had snapped in the bout with Drosser. He did not even have his whip. His only defence was speed. He called to his horses, "Come, Dov! Come away, Krus!" And their ears flicked back as they heard him call their names, and their hooves drummed on the hard earth, and the wheel hubs squealed, for even Taita's black oil was running dry. Then there was the sound of other hoofs blending with those of Nefer's team. And this time when he looked back, Damios was closer still, his horses whipped and galled until their flanks and backs were bloody. Damios had a javelin poised, and now he hurled it. Nefer watched the dart leave his hand and fly in like a poisonous insect. He flinched instinctively as it slammed into the floorboards beside his right foot. It stood out, quivering. "Come away, my darlings!" His voice took on a strident note, and the horses heard it. "Give me all you've got!" Kroos found a little more in his great heart and swept Dov along with him. They began to pull away from Damios's scourged and bleeding pair. "Pull, you swine!" Damios screamed. "Pull, or I'll take the hide off your backs!" And as his long lash sang, they raced together as though an invisible rope linked the two vehicles. Damios seized another javelin and wrapped the thong. As he swung his arm back for the throw, Nefer judged his moment skillfully and flicked the reins. With the javelin in the air, Dov leant into Kroos's shoulder and they swerved slightly, just enough for the dart to fly past Nefer's shoulder. But the turn had cost ground, and Damios snatched his last javelin from the bin and wrapped the thong round his wrist. He was close now, very close. Nefer watched him with a feeling of desperation, gathering his team with a firm rein so that they could anticipate his command. The moment Damios swiveled his right shoulder forward in the throw, Nefer turned his team back the other way, jinking their run at full gallop. But the javelin did not leave Damios's hand. He had fainted. He raised the javelin again into the steady position, levelled and ready to throw. Nefer was forced to swing back or leave the track and tear into the rough ground and scattered boulders. He changed the angle, and this time Damios aimed not at Nefer, but at Dov, whose flank had been exposed by the turn. The dart took her high in the shoulder. It cut through hide and bunched muscle, but then struck the bone and did not penetrate to her vitals. It was not a mortal blow, but a crippling one, for the javelin head was barbed and it dangled down her flank, hampering each stride she took. She tried. She tried with all her heart, but she could no longer keep pace with Kroos, and the blood ran back along her flank and spattered on Nefer's legs. He could feel the chariot slowing under him, and though he called to Dov, the javelin slapped against her flank with each stride she took and tangled in her forelegs. Damios sped forward, and from the corner of his eye Nefer saw the heads of his racing horses draw level with his near wheel, and Damios's voice, hoarse with effort and triumph, sounded almost in his ear. "It's over, Nefer-City! I have you now!" Nefer turned his head and looked across at him. Damios's lips were drawn back in a horrible rictus like that of a corpse who had died of the lockjaw. He'd thrown his last javelin and had discarded his whip, but he'd drawn his sword. How far to run to the gates, Nefer thought. Less than 500 paces. So close, so very close, but still too far. Instinctively he looked at the roof of the temple. It was lined with tiny human figures, and among them, just where he expected to see it, he picked out the scarlet of Mintaka's tunic and saw that she was waving a green branch over her head, her long dark hair tossing like a pennant on the north wind. A prize beyond all others, he thought, and his hand fell upon Damios's javelin that was pegged into the floorboard beside his foot. The head was buried deeply into the woodwork, but he braced himself. Twisting and jerking, he pulled it free. He did not have a throwing thong, but he held it like a spear and looked across at his adversary. Damios's eyes narrowed as he saw the weapon in Nefer's hand, and he took the guard position with the sword. He drew up inexorably alongside Nefer and lunged. Nefer turned the blow with the stock of the javelin. The two vehicles swerved apart, then came together and struck so hard that Nefer was almost thrown over the side and had to clutch wildly at the reins to steady himself. Damios swung a cut at the long staff on which flew Nefer's hair braid, but did not sever the hard bamboo. Nefer recovered his balance and thrust at Damios with the javelin, driving him off. Now the two vehicles were running wheel to wheel and hub to hub. Nefer and Damios were leaning across, hacking and stabbing at each other. The bronze blade slashed across Nefer's chest, and though he threw himself back against the reins, it cut through the leather of his breastplate, and he felt the sting of the razor edge. But he thrust the point of the javelin at Damios's face and forced him to swerve away. Dov was labouring hard. the barbs of the javelin still fixed in her skin, and the shaft banging her legs at each stride. Never heard the sound of many voices, soft at first, and almost drowned in the drumming of hooves and the squeal and rumble of the wheels. But the sound was growing louder at each stride. He looked up, and through the running sweat that stung his eyes, saw the gates directly ahead. The city walls and the rooftops were lined with the crowds. Through the hubbub of their cheering, he thought he heard the sound of Mintaka's voice. "For me, my heart, do this for me." It may have been but a figment of his own exhaustion, but it steeled him, and he called to the horses and gathered them with the reins. But Dov was staggering and falling. Damios came in again, and this time, when Nefer thrust at him, he swung a full blow not at the man, but at the javelin. His blade sheared through the shaft inches from Nefer's fist, leaving him with a useless stump. Nefer hurled it at Damios's head, but he ducked under it, and struck at Nefer again, forcing him to dodge to the far side of the footplate to avoid the bright blade. Damios took instant advantage, and forced his way ahead of Nefer. As he came past, he reached across and seized the rod on which Nefer's hair braid danced and whipped in the wind. He tried to snap it off, but though it bent almost double, it resisted his efforts. Still holding the staff in one hand, Damios reached up with the other hand for the thick, dark hank of hair. It flicked and danced at his fingertips. But he was trying to keep a grip on the hilt of his sword at the same time, and he could not quite get a hold of the trophy. He dropped his sword, and this time caught hold of the braid and tried to tear it free. But the bamboo was resilient and tough, and the braid securely tied. Krus and Damios's offside horses were galloping shoulder to shoulder. Damios was completely absorbed with trying to wrest his trophy from the bamboo staff. He knew that Nefer was disarmed and no real danger, and he ignored the stone gates that loomed up ahead of them.
"Lean in!" Nefer shouted at Krus. "Give him your shoulder!"
Nefer sawed the reins. This was what they'd trained for all those months in the desert. With Taita driving the other team, Nefer had taught Krus to love this contest of strength, and now he bore in with his great right shoulder, tucking it in just behind the other horse, lifting him off balance. The locked chariots veered to the right, and the gateway was coming up fast. The portals were columns of hewn red stone, and though the grit-laden winds of the centuries had polished and shaped them, they were still massive and forbidding. "Ride him off!" Nefer shouted to Krus, and encouraged him with a strong hand on the reins. Krus forced the other horse another yard over until he was headed straight for the solid red stone wall. At the very last instant, Damios became aware of what was happening, and with a wild cry of alarm he let go of the bamboo rod and tried to recover control of his racing chariot. But Krus dominated the other horse and drove him headlong towards the stone gateway. Damios realized that he could not stop the flying chariot and avoid the collision. He tried to jump from the hurtling cockpit, but he was too late. Both his horses ran full tilt into the stone column. It killed them instantly. Nefer heard their last terrified screams as they went in, the crash of the impact, the crackling of their breaking bones, and the shattering and rending of timbers. One wheel was torn clean off and for a moment bounced along beside Nefer's vehicle. Damios was hurled like one of his own javelins, straight into the wall. He struck head first, and his skull burst as though it were an overripe melon. His strong white teeth were embedded in the surface of the red stone. Souvenirs to be prized out later by urchins, threaded on chains of gold and sold in the marketplace. Nefer steered Krus and Dov into the gateway, and though the hub of their near wheel scraped the red stone, they tore through into the central avenue of the city, which was lined on both sides by the joyous crowd. They'd strewn the paving with palm fronds and flowers, and even the shawls and headcloths and other pieces of their own apparel. Nefer's first concern was for Dov. He halted the horses, jumped down and ran to the wounded filly. The barbs of the javelin were buried deeply in her shoulder. He trusted only Taita to remove them, but he snapped off the shaft so that it no longer dangled down her side. and he climbed back to the footplate and took the reins again. The crowd swarmed into the avenue and ran along beside the chariot as it moved on at a walking pace. They reached up to touch Nefer, using their headcloths to wipe up the blood that dribbled down his legs from his wounds. The blood of a god, a pharaoh, and a Red Road warrior would transform the cloth into a sacred relic. Hysterically, they screamed their praises.
"Pray for us, mighty Egypt, pharaoh indeed! Lead us, great pharaoh, let us share your glory! Hail, divine brother of the Red God! May you live 1,000 and 1,000 years, Nefer-Seti, true pharaoh!"
At the entrance to the forum, the crowd was so dense that the city guards had to run ahead of the chariot and club them out of the way before Nefer could drive through into the forum.